Next time, be a little more careful. Plan ahead, avoid unnecessary trouble, and most importantly, stay away from zombie takeout. Welcome to episode 216 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got a little bit of news. First story from Starlog via IO9 Morning Spoilers. Escape from New York remake. A source has told Starlog that the upcoming remake will be more team-based, as Snake Plissken traverses through a treacherous New York landscape with a rogues gallery of criminals who look to leave the island turned prisoner in exchange for the rescue of the captured U.S. president. The source also has a rundown of the team. Plissken's team consists of Mina, a Warzone journalist framed for murder and living in the shadows of New York as a scavenger, Cabby, a schizophrenic travel guide who serves as comic relief, like the original, Gareth, the last surviving member of the president's security team who harbors a dangerous secret, and The Brain, Plissken's former partner in crime who left him to die after a botched robbery. Was the robbery mentioned in the original? That sounds familiar.
I think it may have been.
Yeah, he has his former partner who he hates, so apparently they're putting them together this time.
It's weird, it's been so long since I've seen that movie, and of course the last time we saw that movie was when for the show.
Yeah, a few years
ago. But we've been doing this show for that long now.
Yeah. But, just to finish the article, according to the same source, in the running to play Plissken are Charlie Hunnam, who was in, what was that, Guillermo del Toro, Big Monsters, that thing, Pacific Rim.
Okay.
John Berthal and Dan Stevens, don't know who either one of those are.
Not really.
None of them have the role yet, but sources say it's going to Hunnam.
So wait a minute. Who's directing this, though?
Doesn't say.
This isn't Carpenter?
I doubt Carpenter. I think he's probably retired. I can't remember the last thing he did.
It's not Del Toro?
Unfortunately, I don't think so.
Why would they do this?
Because Hollywood's out of ideas. And it's got a huge cult following.
Why not just re-release Escape from New York?
Yeah. The team angle is interesting. I mean, he kind of had a team in the original, Adrian Barbeau and Borgnine. I think Isaac Hayes was on his side, too, at one point.
Yeah, I guess so. But Snake's a loner, you know?
Yeah.
And if they're not landing on top of the World Trade Center, count me out.
And we have heard about this before, because they were originally going to cast Gerard Butler.
Oh. Ew.
He was in the running for Snake, and before he kind of, you know, faded.
Yeah, I can't see him playing.
I can see him more than Charlie Hunnam. Again, that I've only seen him in Pacific Rim, but he just doesn't seem the Snake type.
No. Who is, though, really?
Good question.
I mean, Martin Short? No. I think that'd be hilarious.
20 years ago, Banderas would have been good.
He get Martin Short as Ed Grimley Jr. or Ed Grimley in the
Snake Plissken, yeah.
Snake Plissken, yeah. This is really decent of you.
We were just discussing Game of Thrones. If he can do the accent, Kit Harington, who plays Jon Snow.
Okay.
I can see him as Snake. He's got the right look for it, at least. But beyond that, I can't really think of anybody.
No.
Anyway, on to the next story from Cinema Blend. Boondock Saints 3 title and plot revealed. We first got wind of a new story featuring fraternal twin vigilantes Connor and Murphy McManus, Sean Patrick Flannery, and The Walking Dead's Norman Reedus, back in 2012, and then more when Troy Duffy, the director and writer, showed off the first page of the new script earlier this year. Now website Flickering Myth reveals that the new feature has a subtitle and the vaguest hint of a plot. Apparently, the new feature will pick up sometime after the end of Boondock Saints 2, All Saints Day, and will come with the subtitle Legion. Duffy explains that the title refers to the legions of people who follow in the McManus' footsteps and start taking the law into their own hands in order to clean up the streets. Duffy also promises Boondock Saints 3 Legion will explore the brothers' newfound status as folk heroes and will go back to reveal their very first crime. That'll be interesting. While it's been 5 years since Boondock Saints 2 All Saints Day was released, Duffy doesn't seem particularly interested in rushing the newest installment. The second film was delayed for years thanks to legal wrangling, but the holdup with the new entry is something much less frustrating. Duffy feels that he needs to take his time in order to, treat it right for the fans. I've never seen the second one, have you?
I was going to say, we've not done the second one. I mean, that's the problem with doing this show is that there are movies I'll be like, oh, I want to see that, but you know what? I'm going to hold off for the
Same here. Same
podcast.
here.
And I think that was one of them. Which means we should put that on the list.
Yes, I'll get to that. I almost held off on Zero Theorem, which I posted on the Facebook page. I watched it yesterday. Almost held off on that for the show. Glad I didn't. And obviously, you're a huge Gillian fan, so you're not going to be holding off on that one.
Well, holding off for the theater.
Oh,
That's
yeah, but
long as I'm holding off for.
not for the review. Although, I mean, we could do it if you, hey, you want to take notes in the theater, we can do it right after.
Yeah, I'm sure, What are they gonna do? Shoot me in the Oh. They
Well,
shoot me in the
it's not
theater.
like you're filming it, you're just taking notes, which we've done before. We've reviewed things that were in theaters.
That was a reference to last week's episode. And you know what? There's something that I'm very surprised that we missed from last week's episode. God bless America. The shooting in the theater.
Yeah. The whole Aurora thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking of it when we were talking about that. I was trying to steer away from it.
Well, how do you? I mean, like, what year was the shooting in Aurora?
2012, because
Oh.
we reviewed Shoot 'em Up just afterward.
Okay.
And then we did talk about it because we had to.
So God Bless America came before that.
Yeah, I think a year before.
All right. So it's like the Gilbert Gottfried too soon, like where he starts talking about future events, and of course they haven't happened yet too
Yeah.
soon after he did the whole tsunami thing.
So no, I mean it wasn't a too soon in that case. It preceded, and the guy claimed to be the Joker, so it obviously wasn't the influence.
He had the wrong color hair.
Yeah, no, we got into that in our Shoot 'em Up review if you want to hear our full
Yes,
discussion on this topic.
that's right.
Because that was the slightly distasteful thing when it happened. I realized we're gonna review a movie called Shoot 'em Up on our next episode, like a week later.
Well,
Yeah. Give us an opportunity to discuss it without going too off topic, like we are now.
it's like the Sleepy Hollow ad about, and people are on their shit for talking about someone who has been beheaded after a beheading. And it's like, come on. Headless Horseman is one of the OG beheaded
Yeah,
guys.
exactly.
If anything, they could sue these ISIS people for copyright infringement. Anyway.
On to this week's movie, which is from 2011, Munraku, and I am going to be mispronouncing it a little bit just because if I gave it the proper Japanese pronunciation, which I think is more of Bunraku, there'd be a lot of outtakes and it would be very distracting.
Be hilarious. Actually, we should have set up like shots in front of us.
I did channel anime for like 4 months. I had to pronounce a lot of Japanese. I could do it, but it wouldn't be pretty. I'm out of practice.
That was when this thing started from zombie from Tuesday afternoon show. We did the B movie thing. The highlight of my the whole recording was listening to you to pronounce the foreign names.
Yeah, well, that was more of a news thing than
Yes,
than the B movie thing. Yeah.
can you tell I'm putting off the impromptu plot summary?
Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary. Sponsored by the man with no name. Okay, we get it. You're a badass. Can we move on now?
And also brought to you by sushi. It's just fish.
Indeed, it is.
And someone forgot to cook the damn thing. Anyway, so yes, we have the man with no name on a train with the samurai who's I guess on an honor mission from his father. So they're on a train together to find the person. Well, they don't tell you what the man with no name's actual mission is.
They actually never tell you in the movie until the very end, actually.
Yes, it's pretty much one of his last
I
lines.
figured it out a little earlier because they hinted a bit, but
Yeah. I'm still not even sure if I understand entirely what the fuck
We'll get
happened
there.
there. But anyway, they are on a train because this is a post-something world. I don't know if it's apocalyptic. I wouldn't say apocalyptic.
There
There's
was
two.
a huge war, and as a result, guns were outlawed.
Yes. So it's a post-gun world. I was really hoping for like the Indiana Jones thing to end the whole movie, like where just their confrontation and the sword play, and then someone just finally taking a gun out and shooting it, and then the credits roll. But that did not happen. Spoiler alert. So anyway, they are in a post-gun world. There is a woodcutter who is a who's sort of the dictator, oppressor of many people. And I'm gathering this is in Asia or Europe.
Don't know. It doesn't specify. It's
They
sort of
just
generic.
say it's east of the Atlantic.
Okay, so it's not in the US.
Right. That's all they're saying. They're east of the Atlantic. And at the end, they do show a rising sun, which, of course, symbolic of Japan. I would think if they were in Japan, they would talk about the Pacific. So my assumption is they are somewhere in Europe
Although a lot of
or
the
Africa.
architecture is very Japanese.
Yes, right. There's many genres thrown together, but yes, Japanese is prevalent throughout most of this. But anyway, the plot. So there's the big bad dictator. He has his nine killers, and they do tally each one, and they show kind of a place card for each one, which is kind of handy, but then they lose track of that towards the end.
Yes. Well, it doesn't really matter except for number one. That's the only one. Or number two, the one at the top of the list.
Right.
It's the only one you really track.
But anyway, he lets them fight it out with each other, who can become the top dog if someone wants to move up in the world, or when one dies, he usually goes to replace them. Except he never got the chance to in this film goes because there's a lot of them that are gonna die. So yes, they come into this town. There are the proletariat who are all dressed in kind of they're the people, of course, and they're dressed in sort of like a Maoist kind of thing, which
Or
kind of
sort of the
threw me.
Soviet Russia kind of influence there too, I think. They're called the proletariat.
Yeah, but you generally associate like the gray clothes and the cap, the billed cap and stuff with more of China
I kind
than
of think of that as generally
Russia.
communist.
Well, yes. And yeah, for some reason the guy, the bad guy's henchmen wear red, which I'm thinking is sort of a play, more colorful than either the brown or black shirts. But anyway, so there are these, they meet a bartender, they get into many bar fights, and he shows them the way, and I guess you could even say hilarity ensues.
Yeah, sort of. Take your generic Man with No Name movie, your generic samurai revenge movie, put them together with some interesting visuals.
Yeah, this is very much mashup to the extreme. In fact, it was one of the things I was thinking of last night watching this was just, have we really just gotten to this point where we can't have a movie of a single genre anymore?
Now, I should explain that the title Bunraku is derived from a 400-year-old form of Japanese puppet theater, a style of storytelling that uses 4-foot or 1.2-meter tall puppets with highly detailed heads, each operated by several puppeteers who blend into the background wearing black robes and hoods. Probably where the modern stagecraft uniforms come from.
Right, yet the whole style isn't as much of a puppet show as it is the pop-up book.
That makes sense. The backgrounds look sort of origami.
The bartender, Woody Harrelson, is working on a pop-up book, and of course, the sky is ha kind of has this like folded paper look about it. The sun has kind of a folded paper look to it. Anything in the background is clearly painted or drawn, kind of sketched. It's kind of like the AHA video in color in a lot of ways.
And it's also shot entirely on a stage. In 2007, Guy Moshi, the director, said he's working on a movie that he described as an action fantasy circus ride into man's fascination with violence. It's sort of a spaghetti western samurai movie, and it's sort of shot on a stage and built entirely on a stage.
And yeah, it definitely shows that it was entirely indoors.
Now, I should also mention that Mike Patton played the narrator, Mike Patton from Faith No More.
It drove me nuts throughout the entire movie because I was like, this voice is so fucking familiar. And then when the credits came, and it's so weird because, they just came back into the news.
And he actually references a Faith No More song in the movie. When the drifter is jumping across rooftops and he comes down punching one of the guards, the narrator, Patton, says, "Happy birthday, fucker."
Right.
Now, much like God Bless America, I saw this on Netflix just over 2 years ago, June of 2012 in this case.
So you've done a lot of movies that we would be doing on your own anyway.
Yeah, this was one of those. It looked so interesting when it was in theaters for about 5 minutes that I couldn't wait.
I never knew this was in the theater.
For about 5 minutes, and I saw a couple of ads, and it looked really interesting. So as soon as it made it to Netflix, I had to see it.
I don't think I've ever seen an ad for this. I had never heard of this movie until now.
And I thought the narrator was interesting at the beginning when he's setting everything up, particularly
Yeah.
because of the puppet show angle.
Right.
Got a little old. I mean, Patton did a great job. He's got one of those iconic voices, particularly for our generation. But I don't think it needed a narrator beyond that initial intro.
It's nice for consistency throughout.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of movies do that where they just have a narrator in the beginning and then they forget they have a narrator.
Yeah, true. Now, it is definitely a case of style over substance. I mentioned to you that it's similar to Sucker Punch in that respect. But it's a lot of fun.
Sucker Punch was style over everything.
Yes.
There was nothing else.
Fair enough.
I mean, this had substance to it. In fact, Sucker Punch was, I mean, just so ridiculous. I mean, the problem I had with it was she would do this dance and then they would cut to a fantasy and then cut back to reality. And it was just, well, the dance just bent reality.
Right.
Whereas this is more like, oh, I want to say Summer Glau, but not as graceful as she is, of
The
course.
fight scenes.
Right.
Yeah, the reason this episode is called Dance Battle is because they look like something out of a very well choreographed version of a West Side Story,
Oh,
because they're
definitely.
dance scenes, but the fight choreography is actually really solid too.
It has its moments, definitely, the fight choreography.
It depends on who's doing the fighting.
Exactly.
Gackt, who plays the samurai, is a martial arts movie star over in Japan. I think Japan. So he
Yeah.
knows how to use a sword. And a lot of the day players knew how to use their weapon. When you're dealing with someone like Josh Hartnett,
A cowboy needs a gun, let's
yeah,
be honest.
his fight
It's
scenes
kind
were a little off looking.
of ridiculous.
Number two's fight scenes were a little off because he actually had to act. Aside from Gackt, anyone who didn't have to act and was just there to fight looked great. And Ron Perlman looked pretty good too, because it's Ron Perlman.
Well, he didn't have like fight.
No, he just had the one at the end.
Yeah, and
And it really wasn't much.
that was more of a beat down than a
Yeah.
fight.
And it's Ron Perlman. He can do just about anything and it looked cool.
Exactly, yeah.
And in addition to Puppet Show, this also had a very strong comic book look.
Definitely.
The Japanese subtitles were in the middle and were very sort of almost in probably in Comic Sans and looked,
Definitely.
like word bubbles in a comic book. And a lot of just the way it was shot reminded me of comic books and the color palette, which I loved. It's a very colorful movie.
It annoyed the hell out of me at first, the comic book motif, I guess you'd call it. All I was thinking was like, Dick Tracy was how many years ago? But I mean, obviously this looked better than Dick Tracy. This had a better color palette than Dick Tracy.
This also came out around the same time as Sin City, so it was kind of playing to that same genre.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. I thought this came after Sin City.
Was about the same time. I don't know if it was before or after. Sucker Punch was also close to that time. So there was a lot of very stylized, filmmaking
Sucker
going on.
Punch I had heard of before going into it because they were like billboards. They advertised the hell out of Sucker Punch here in
Because
the
it was
city.
Zack Snyder, who
Yeah.
had just done 300 and was, thought to be the next Golden Boy. Now, one point where the movie did take a bit of a misstep for me. In the middle, Woody Harrelson's character, did he have a name, by the way, or was he just the bartender?
Oh, I don't know.
Let's call him the bartender. Tells the story of someone named Arachnidus, who was kind of came off as this Greek hero.
Oh, of course you had a problem with them mentioning spiders.
Well, aside from that, they only showed them briefly. No, but he was Spider-Man. It was the story of Spider-Man. He practically said, "With great power comes great responsibility."
That's true. I hadn't thought of that.
Seemed a little out of place. Didn't really play into anything else in the movie. It wasn't really, a lesson he was trying to put across. I think he was talking to the samurai Yoshi in that
Man, I
scene.
was out of it last night. That you're right. That's fucking Spider-Man.
Almost exactly.
And yeah, Harrelson's character, the bartender. That's it.
I will say that this is the first role that I really kind of started to like Woody Harrelson in.
What?
Because, I mean, Natural Born Killers proved that he could act, but I kind of didn't. I wasn't a fan until this movie came along.
I'm like loading up his IMDb right now, 'cause damn, I mean, come on.
I also didn't see a lot of his movies for that reason, I mean, aside from Cheers and Natural Born Killers, I can't even really think of anything before this.
I'm thinking Wag the Dog.
Oh, I
Like
forgot about that
even
one, yeah.
before I get to
Okay, I did see that. That was more for, Leary and a few of the old timers. I saw that one.
that was a nutty performance. LA Story. Kingpin.
And I avoided the Farrelly movies.
Farrelly Brothers. All right.
I
Yeah.
remember he was in it, but it's a Farrelly Brothers movie. Aside from Something About Mary, I tried to avoid them.
I'll go with Wag the Dog as like the first one that really got me as a fan of him as an actor, and that was really a goofy performance, but it was still good.
And I think maybe that's why that one didn't really hit that mark for me, because it was goofy. It was very much Woody from Cheers. This is completely
Wow,
different.
it was a cr insane way
Well,
from
yeah. Well, yeah.
Cheers.
The bartender, and much like Natural Born Killer, is a completely different person. And
Yeah.
I think this one appealed to me because he was just kind of a normal guy. And he was, he was Yoda, basically.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
And I'm not going to nitpick anything, science related in this movie,
Well,
because.
science doesn't exist in
No,
this.
it's very much a fantasy universe.
They're paper people.
Yeah. But they were using a film projector to show a live feed during the card game.
Well, right.
Because the woodcutter, the villain, Perlman's character, was in one room separate from the game, for safety. And he's watching the game, and they're seeing him with film projectors. And they had film. They
Of
weren't digital
course.
projectors.
Right.
I'm not quite sure how that works.
Well, they've worked every piece of technology from the last I guess there wasn't a television in there, but I mean they had somebody doing the telegraph. I mean
It's code,
they
yeah.
right, they worked it all in there.
So yeah, I guess they had to fit film projectors in there somehow.
It was a black and white film. It was a video monitor, but they used the projector, the black and white.
Now there was one particular fight scene that really stuck out to me. The scene on the tightrope, on or rather the trapeze net.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it basically acts like a trampoline, but this to see a brawl, effectively, it was an unarmed brawl on a trapeze net, was brilliantly choreographed.
Yeah. Probably Harden's
Yeah.
best fight scene.
Well, because he just had to run and kind of throw punches just before
Yes.
the guy flipped out of his way.
Right. That scene, that whole circus scene is really where the movie started turning me in with it, more. Using the whole acrobatics as a means of fighting, I thought was brilliant. Just having the people jumping at them, not sure when they're actually going to attack or when they're just jumping at you. And having the whole duck and punch was probably the best one, I thought.
And I also liked when they were, on their way to the woodcutter, the two quick fights in, just shown in silhouette.
Oh yeah.
Because they were just very quick. They Gackt and Hartnett's character, the samurai and the drifter, just dispatched their opponent very quickly. But they had to show them getting some opposition. It was just through a rice paper wall. It was a very nice touch.
I was kind of disappointed that there wasn't a turn of some sort towards the end, you know?
You want respect.
Oh, you go through all the trouble of keeping the identity of the killers concealed until they're introduced. And I was really hoping that, like, the number three was going to be somebody we didn't see coming, you know?
Yeah, there really wasn't a twist, except
No.
for maybe what the Drifter's stake and everything was, why he was going after the woodcutter.
And why else would he have been going after the woodcutter? It wasn't that much of a twist.
There's a line in the movie that the Drifter says that his mother told him that. Then the woodcutter says that someone he'd killed, said to him just with his dying breath. And I didn't quite connect it there, but then the bartender says, "I was a kid when he was around, but he was a legend," said
Yeah.
the Drifter. And that's when it clicked, and that's when I remembered, that line, repeating, and realized he's talking about the Drifter's father, who was the guy who the woodcutter killed.
Yeah.
And, "You killed my father, prepare to die."
Right. So not exactly a whoa.
But I did like that it wasn't spelled out. You kind of had to piece it together if you wanted to get there before the very end of the movie.
Not exactly a Luke, I am your father moment.
No,
Spoiler,
no.
everybody, if you haven't seen that one. What?
Scott Mendelson of Huffington Post pointed out that the film is certainly a case of style over substance, and the utter lack of substance may be fatal for some viewers, but the picture boasts a unique visual palette and some interesting ideas, and this is the important part. Bunraku is not quite a good film, but it is surely a bad one worth watching for those who know what they're getting into.
The whole complaint of style over substance, if you watch any of the samurai movies or the spaghetti westerns, what are you watching them for?
Their style. I mean, they're basic revenge movies.
Like, what? Oh, I can't watch The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly because it's just, that is just style over substance.
Good point.
What the fuck? It's a samurai spaghetti western. Yes, that they set out to make that. But there actually is more substance to this than those movies. I mean, yeah, it's a statement about mankind and our love of violence and how, there are people out there that need to unbalance the film, the balance of nature that they're saying, oh, well, that's just how it is. But I think the point is, you need more people who are going to fight the good fight than people just sitting out and serving sushi at their shitty bar.
Oh, and speaking of fighting, only thing I was wondering about at the end was the Drifter playing possum in the final fight. Because the woodcutter gets him, drops him, and basically just beats him down for about 10 minutes. And he tries to get up a few times, it falls again. And then at the very last minute, he sneaks up on him and gets him.
Considering he's almost impaled, I don't even understand how he
He's got an axe in the shoulder.
right. That was kind of the ridiculous part of the Drifter is how many times you get the shit beat out of him, and yet he was just like, I got some cuts on my face, but I'm fine.
Well, that's again a stereotype of these kind of movies. The
Well, yeah.
protagonist gets literally beat half to death and then comes back and wins at the end.
That was last scene. Now we're on to the next scene.
Exactly.
Oh, they snuck a montage by you.
Okay, wow. Where?
The one where they were showing the weapons that they were bringing to the fight and
Okay.
training the soldiers.
Well, they were showing weapons, so I was probably distracted by that.
Ah, weapon montage is acceptable.
Those who
Montage
don't
number
know, I
two.
collect knives and swords. Speaking of the army, I thought that was a nice surprise. I just thought about that. Because I thought the Drifter and the Samurai were going to attack on their own. It was nice to see that they had this army to work with them, at least briefly.
Well, yeah, that pretty much was another, part of substance to the movie, was that you had the proletariat, and
Overthrowing the dictator, basically.
right, and it probably why this movie really didn't get advertised much when you have proletariat as like the good guys, and I mean a very like Maoist Castro-like general,
True.
as their leader.
Good point.
Oh, I had one fight that I liked too. It was early on, the sword versus stick battle.
Yes. He keeps cutting down the stick,
And
which
then,
is what would happen.
right, just the end, he took the stick and he beat the henchmen up and killed them with it. Or knocked them out, whatever. And so he's left with the main henchman with the sword, and he's holding half a stick. They're staring at each other, and the guy's just like, "Come on, you're gonna really come at me? You've only got a stick, and I got a sword. What are you gonna do?" So he throws the stick out the window, and the guy's like, "What?" And he's like, "I'll give you one last chance."
I gotta say, for someone who doesn't act in English movies primarily, Gackt did an awesome job, not just with his action scenes, but his acting. His characterization was great. I knew exactly who Yoshi was.
I had thought this was a foreign film since I had never heard of it. And it wasn't until I sat down and watched the credits in the beginning. Josh Hartnett, Woody Harrelson, Demi Moore? What the fuck?
All right, on to sequels and remakes.
On a sequel, some remakes.
No sequels so far. There's really no room for a sequel. Well, I guess you could. You just showed the vacuum being filled again.
There's plenty of room for a sequel, actually. In fact, that's what kind of one thing that annoyed me about the whole there's always someone with greater power and making it a point of saying he's the most powerful east of the Atlantic.
Yeah. There's someone west of the
Someone west of the
Atlantic just
Atlantic
as
that's more
powerful,
power
yeah.
or more powerful.
Yeah.
I was like, you guys are fucking like really laying it down thick,
And
huh?
maybe they were planning a sequel, but the movie didn't do well,
All
so
right.
it didn't happen.
I think it said it cost them $25 million to
Yeah,
make this.
the budget was 25 million, yeah. I have no idea if it made it. I don't made it back, most likely not. I didn't
I
check
would
the
think
numbers.
not. But for an action film, that is very small budget
Oh yeah.
these days.
Because there weren't many effects. It was
Right.
actual fight choreography. There was no blood, there was no explosions. It was just hand-to-hand stuff.
Most of that 25 went to building the set. And then the actor's salary.
Yeah. And the score, which I happen to really like. I mean, I think they probably paid a lot for that.
Yeah, this whole like big band, because they mixed in zoot suits in with that, for the bad guys with the Western and Japanese
And then there was also some hard rock
stuff.
stuff for the more heavy action scenes and the chase
Right.
scenes and whatnot. It was just a nice mix of different genres that fit the scene they were covering very nicely.
And they didn't overdo the chase scenes, which are always very, very
And
nice.
the one car chase scene was very clever.
Yeah, it
I
was.
loved how they got out of it. So, yeah, there's room for a sequel, probably not going to happen.
No.
No one should remake it because this movie is a singular experience.
How would you remake this even?
Yeah. Unless you're Guy Moshi, you shouldn't, because he had a vision.
Yeah.
We'll see what we thought of that vision, but it's definitely a unique vision, and I don't know who could remake this and make it interesting.
Right. Unless they just did a cartoon.
Yeah, an animated version could be interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where you go with the sequel, is
The
turn into an
musical.
animated series. Right, on to brains.
Out of brains.
Like Mendelssohn said, it's not a good movie, but it's a fun movie. I love it for that reason. I love the color palette. I love just how insane and unique it is. And I think it should be seen. I'm going for.
I'm right where there with you. I was at three, and then I was like, well, Mike Patton definitely gives this a brain. It's something you should see. It's visually, be nice to see this in the theater too, actually, to see this on a giant screen because it's a beautiful movie. It kind of does the Dick Tracy look throughout most of the first half, but I don't think it insults your intelligence, really.
Not at all. All right, and what have we learned?
That you shouldn't make someone eat wasabi on
That scene hurt. I don't know. I've never even had wasabi, but I know it's hot. And
I actually, that's the only thing, part of sushi that I'll eat. Well, rice too, of course, obviously, but I love wasabi.
And I learned that things never go well before first going wrong and then getting worse. All right, so until 2 weeks from now, we're taking next week off, when we'll be reviewing A Fantastic Fear of Everything. Go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up through the next two, I think. We gotta add some more soon.
Yes, we do.
The request form, if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And the recommendations list. I'm really surprised you put it on the rec list.
I love a good kung fu movie and a good spaghetti western, and it was kind of the best of both worlds.
I expected it to be Sucker Punch all over again. I'm pleasantly surprised.
When the dancing has a purpose, it's fine.
You can also email us zombietakeout@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-CTO1 or for the alphanumerically challenged 414-368-9861. Once again, proving my theory from last week. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee, and until next time, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
It's for people with imagination.
Started.
Okay.
Sort of tangentially related to the movie. Had a horrible I feel old moment. I think it was yesterday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Someone posted an article on Facebook saying that Faith No More was releasing their first album in 18
18
years.
years. Yeah, I did that too. I was like, oh wow, that is awesome. And then I came back like 2 seconds later, like, wait, album of the year was 18 years ago?
I distinctly remember Last Cup of Sorrow. I love that song. It doesn't feel like 18 fucking years ago. It feels like maybe 8 years ago.
Oh yeah, that was off that album.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to check Wikipedia to make sure that was the song, and yeah, that was the big single off of it.
I really liked that album too.
Just 18 fucking years.